Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. A solo day. It's just me. Well, me and a lot of news. So much news. We've got court cases in progress. We've got court cases coming up. We've got court cases attempting to be delayed. There's a lot of that stuff. But even more important than that, we have AI. It's the perfect shield against any criticism. I think we're all discovering that as the days go by. We're going to adjudicate one of those claims. CNN spreading just casual fun time Islamophobia against Ilhan Omar. That'll be cool. And the feud between Don Lemon and Elon Musk, the plot has thickened in that. We're going to get to a little bit of what it appears frustrated Elon Musk so much about the interview with Don Lemon that he needed to cut off the partnership they're going to have with him. And that's just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, we got to talk about Ted Cruz. He had Katie Bird in his show, which you know that's going to get weird. And it did. Ted Cruz has more women he thinks are hot that he just has to let you know about. So we'll be talking about that. JK Rowling seemingly running defense for the Nazis in a weird way. We'll be debating that. And if we have time, awesome ad against Donald Trump featuring former Trump supporters. They don't like him anymore. That's not that surprising, you know, but why? Why exactly do they have an issue with the guy that they used to enthusiastically be a part of the cult of? So we're going to be taking a look at that to close out our show. Now, if you're on a platform where it makes sense, please hit the like button, share the stream, and you could also send us comments, tweets, and super chats. And someday you will once again be able to earn Blue Apron gift cards for that. But right now, unfortunately not. As I did a couple of days ago with Rayvanna, I do want to give you a little bit of a topic though. So as we launch into our legal roundup, and as we start to preview the first of the actual criminal cases, every time we talk about this on the show, we have debates, me and whoever the co-host is, about whether we think it's likely that there will actually be consequences, legal consequences, including jail time for these different trials. And I'm curious what you all think about that. So do you think that that is a likely outcome? And I'm also interested of the variety of different cases that haven't yet begun, how do you rank them? Which are the ones that you think are perhaps most important and which are the ones that you don't particularly care about? I'm curious about that. I've heard from a lot of my co-hosts, but I'd like to hear from you as well. And with all that said, let's get started.
I know they announced a bond in the Carroll case, around $90 million in the Carroll case this week. Any closer to getting a bond in the real estate case? And you're right, it's a judgment, not a settlement. No agreement made in that case.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately, I can't speak to that. That's privileged, and I am the attorney, one of the attorneys on that case. But like I said, the judgment's absurd, and the fact that we're even talking about this, Martha, is absurd. And I hope that the appellate division will do the right thing here, as we've seen them do a few times before.
That's so helpful. Always glad to see Alina Habb on the news to reveal nothing, to answer none of the questions that she knew she'd be asked. The only reason she was brought on was to answer those questions, and she of course won't do that. And I get, you know, sometimes things are privileged, but you can't just say that it's privileged when there's no reason that it would be privileged. And I know that she may not be sure of that because she's only barely a lawyer, but has there been any progress in getting the bond? That's privileged. Is it in general terms? Like, I'm not saying that you're gonna like blow up the spot of someone who's considering underwriting it specifically, but you can't even talk about whether you're getting closer. We are rocketing towards the deadline. He only has a couple more weeks. You can't give us even a vague idea of whether he's gonna be able to do that, because it's not like there aren't high stakes. If he can't, and you're not reassuring us that he can actually make good on the bond, then his buildings could be seized in less than 2 weeks. So, okay, that's not a bad thing from my point of view, but you're on Fox News to reassure the right, and you're not doing that. Once again, Alina Habb refusing to do the job. But anyway, the first bond has actually been submitted and accepted. That's on the E. Jean Carroll trial. So a $92 million bond. We had previously talked about the fact that it was being offered, but now the judge has actually accepted it. So that one's out of the way. Bear in mind, that's kind of the easy one. I mean, $100 million isn't nothing, but it's not a half billion dollars. That said, there are still some lingering questions about that first bond, because it's good now, nothing's gonna be done about that. And the good thing is that if Donald Trump's appeals process is either doesn't actually get off the ground, if it's not accepted, or if he fails upon the appeal, this now means that E. Jean Carroll almost certainly can get the money, because it's no longer up to Donald Trump to hand it over. Now, it's those who are underwriting the bond, which in this case is Chubb. And I'm so glad that it's Chubb. But anyway, this is a big corporation. And when it was announced that they were the ones that were going to be underwriting this bond, a lot of people wondered why. Like, that seems like a weird thing to do. This is kind of a divisive topic. Why is it that you'd want to step in? Well, Evan Greenberg is the CEO of Chubb, and he said in a letter to investors and customers just yesterday that the company's $91.6 million appeals bond given to Trump had, quote, nothing to do with the underlying merits or with favoring any of the parties in the defamation case. He said Chubb is in no way supporting Trump, although they are literally financially supporting him. I mean, that's just what words mean, but okay, we're moving on. And added that the company is supporting and is, quote, part of the justice system plumbing involved in the case. Now look, if what he means by that is that Donald Trump and his legal defense is a whole lot of poop, then maybe it makes sense that you're talking about the fact that you're part of the justice system plumbing. And you can say, like, you can make the case, this isn't about Donald Trump, this isn't about E. Jean Carroll, this is kind of easy money, okay? We underwrite the bond, we get several million dollars as sort of like a fee or commission on this. It potentially generates even more money in interest. So we could end up, sure, it's basically an investment. We're gonna make $10 million, $15 million. You could say that. He's kind of implying that without actually saying it, which makes me, and I think a lot of other people, wonder if he's being honest. And if in fact this is a guy who perhaps likes Donald Trump, wants to support Donald Trump, or perhaps wants Donald Trump's support in the future, using not his money to help out Donald Trump and not to just donate to him, but doing one of the weird things that's totally legal in our system, which is you effectively have provided $100 million to Trump, and it's not a campaign donation. It's totally legal to do this. Donald Trump totally owes you, and we're just supposed to be okay with that. He could never write a check to Trump's campaign for $91.3 million. He couldn't use Chubb money to do that, but he could effectively give the guy the money and maybe not even charge that interest. And that's just totally cool. So look, maybe this is reassuring to the investors and to the customers of Chubb. If I were one of them, it wouldn't be. I would have further questions. Hopefully they will. He says to close that the firm understands how polarizing and emotional the case is and how easy it would have been for Chubb to decline doing business with Trump, noting that it supports the rule of law and still believes it did the right thing. Again, yes, it would have been very easy to not do it. Every other corporation in the world didn't do it. You're the only one who did do it, so it would have been super simple. And you still believe you did the right thing. You haven't really explained how that's the right thing. Like, this isn't, we're not talking about like whether you have a right to a trial. Like, we all agree that even if you seem super guilty, you have a right to a trial. You have a right to representation. You have a right to a variety of things. You don't necessarily have a right to a massive corporation underwriting your bond so you can file a baseless appeal against E. Jean Carroll. So I don't know. I come from, I guess, a different school of thought than Greenberg. But anyway, in terms of the interest that it's generating, it is increasing by more than $111,000 every single day. A good portion of $1 million a week. By the time we get to the hush money case, it will be nearly $2 million higher. And that is just wild. And as of right now, he is still trying unsuccessfully to delay the other judgment, the one that Alina Haba wouldn't talk about. He has until March 25th to stay that, meaning that he would need to put up the money, the assets, or a bond for this one by that point. And if he fails to do so, Letitia James, the AG of New York, has already said that she is going to start seizing his assets. And that is now just 11 days away. And just in case you've forgotten some of these, that is not the entirety of all the money that Donald Trump owes people. There's other sums as well. So he owes E. Jean Carroll $5 million for the initial judgment over the sexual assault, as well as the initial case having to do with defamation. It's easy to forget that the more than $90 million one, that's the second one. And there might be future ones, but he also owes money there. He owes $400,000 to the New York Times, thousands of dollars for gag order violations, and nearly $400,000 to Orbis Business Intelligence, the consulting firm owned by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele. Now, those sums for him, it's probably like a rounding error. I don't think he particularly cares about it, but it's a reminder that when he baselessly sues people, it doesn't often go his way because he's not listening to his lawyers. He's launching into these lawsuits based purely off of emotion. It's a knee-jerk thing, and that's why he so frequently loses and has to hand over huge sums of money. But in any event, we're gonna set aside the fraud stuff and the other bonds. We'll know within 2 weeks whether he can back it or whether Trump Tower gets seized. But I wanna turn from the civil stuff to potentially the more serious stuff, and that is the criminal cases. So the former president's first criminal case is now just 11 days away from starting, or is it? Here's Alina Haba with a strange claim about that case.
Do you think that case is gonna get underway on March 25th? And how does the former president feel about this one that is likely to happen before, right in the middle of the election season?
Yeah, it's a couple of good questions there. Number one, do I think it's going to go ahead? Well, really, it shouldn't. We have an immunity defense that's currently up on the Supreme Court. It's going to be made a decision that should be stayed until all of those decisions are made, number one, and we'll see what happens there.
Well, I think I know what will happen there, because what the hell are you talking about, Alina Haba? And look, I get if you watch that video and you don't know the major flaw with her argument there, I don't put that on you. We hear these claims of immunity being thrown around so casual these days that we just sort of accept, oh yeah, no, they'll claim that he's immune. But bump the brakes for just 1 second, because the absolute immunity claim is that he's reading into non-existent case law or DOJ guidelines or whatever, that because generally you can't pursue the president while he's president for civil matters, that now we're gonna expand that to criminal cases and anything he did while he was president that they can even tangentially link to his official duties as a president. So the idea is the special counsel cannot have this January 6th case because he was president during that. And everything that he did had something to do with his official duties. It didn't, but whatever, that's the claim that they're making. So that's the claim. I think it's crazy. I think it's baseless. I don't think the SCOTUS is going to uphold it. I don't think that the concept of absolute immunity fits at all. But even so, that's this thing here. He was president, the things he did as president. What the hell does that have to do with the hush money trial, Alina Haba? And that's not a rhetorical question, I'm serious. He wasn't president at that time. He did it in advance of the 2016 election. And I don't think that you can claim that even if you somehow think that he was president at that point, that paying off Stormy Daniels was related to his official duties as president. Neither of the even ridiculous buffoonish claims that you make in pursuit of this absolute immunity apply in any way here. And honestly, I'm getting to be a little bit worried about Alina Haba, because when Joe Biden couldn't remember what year he was vice president, everybody lost their minds. She can't remember what year her client was the actual president. And it's kind of her job to do that. So anyway, that doesn't make any sense, except if you accept that the argument they're making for absolute immunity is not at the end of the day, the actual argument that they want to make. The actual argument that they appear to want to make is Donald Trump has absolute immunity, period, full stop, end of story. Not for while he was president, not for official duties, not for anything, just he has immunity. He's the best, he's God, he's the emperor, he can do whatever he wants. That's the only way that you can interpret what she said and have it make any sense whatsoever. Because this is not anything having to do with what they previously talked about. The SCOTUS ruling is not going to bear on this. And you'll notice that the SCOTUS is not jumping out to stop these trials. Maybe there's a reason for that, Alina Haba. I don't know, have you considered talking to another lawyer? I'm sure you're a notable figure. I'm sure they'd give you a little bit of advice, but this is just absolutely ridiculous. In any event, we'll see what happens with that, because at the end of the day, as important as I think the hush money case is, and I do think that this was a violation of campaign finance law, I do think that it was an attempt to spend money illicitly to hide the truth of who he was, mostly from his own voters. I do think that that's important, but that said, I don't think it's not a drop in the bucket compared to the illegality of what happened in pursuit of overturning the 2020 election. So her argument is ridiculous. It makes her look like she doesn't understand literally the first thing about the law or their own defense. But I don't care as much about that as the January 6th thing. So we're still waiting. It's gonna be the better part of a month and a half until we have some clarity on absolute immunity in that case.
I wish that all the counts had been dropped, because that's probably what should have been. I mean, at least it was a step in the right direction. It goes to the sloppiness of, frankly, the prosecutors down there. We know that that's the case. And more importantly, that this should not have been brought in general.
What do you think it means for whether or not he will decide to remove Fani Willis from this case? What does your gut tell you on this, Alina?
I don't think it's indicative necessarily of his actions in terms of Fani. I think that Fani, whatever she calls herself, she's got her own issues that are outside of this case that clearly have permeated her decision-making ability. And as I've always said, as my clients always said, we know that these were motivated by one thing and one thing only, and that's election interference that's trying to bring Trump down. And
I am unfortunately constrained by language requirements for our live stream, so I can't say to Alina Haba what I would truly like to say about the Fani, whatever she calls herself. I think that you could probably fill in the blanks. I will say this, it's Fani. She calls herself that for, I think, a good reason, because it's her goddamn name. That's her actual name. You call yourself your name. Lots of people do. Actually, millions of people. I call myself John because my name is John. You call yourself Alina because that's your actual name. What the hell is that supposed to mean? By the way, like, the Martha McCollum had just said her name, and Martha McCollum had just pronounced her name correctly. So you don't really have an excuse. You don't have an excuse, but you do have a motivation, don't you? Because I don't think it's lost on anyone in the audience why she said what she said. Okay, Fani, whatever she calls herself. The message is clear. She's the sort of person that we don't need to respect her name. Okay, and it fits into kind of a pattern for Fox News of not particularly caring about how names are pronounced for certain sorts of people who happen to be black women. I don't know. It's just a pattern that I've noticed. You know, Alina Haba totally needlessly did that. She could have just called her the AG. She just could have called her Willis. She could have called her by her actual name. She chose not to do that, forcing us to speculate as to why that is. And I know Fox News, I know how they treat black women and their names. But anyway, if we set aside the ridiculous, needless racism there, let's talk about what's actually going on. So it is a good day for Donald Trump. I mean, Alina, it's not even a good day for Alina Haba. She's not involved in that trial. She's a lawyer for Trump, so maybe, I don't know, by proximity or whatever, it's a good day. But six of the counts against Trump and his co-defendants were actually dropped. But as we talked about yesterday in the show, I do have to be clear, they could return. Like soliciting a public official to violate their oath of office, like that's what they did. The judge even made clear that he thinks that there's a strong amount of evidence there. They just need to be a little bit clearer about exactly what law was broken in that violation of office. And there's every reason to believe that they'll be able to do that. And no amount of Fani Willis having gone on dates or whatever is going to change the fundamental facts of this case, which have already resulted in a number of people pleading guilty as part of settlements. His co-conspirators are already dropping like flies around this because they know what they did. They tried to overturn the results of that election in a variety of forms. And Donald Trump had among the most direct involvement in that. He was the guy calling up Brad Raffensperger and telling him, I need you to find me 11,184 votes, one more than I need. Sometimes I just wish that we could get these people, these ridiculous cartoon characters that infest our politics, whether it's the pundits or the politicians or the lawyers like Alina Haba. And just like, can we give them that truth serum from Harry Potter and just get them to be something like honest for 5 seconds? Alina Haba, do you think that was a perfect phone call? Do you think that politicians should be calling up secretaries of state and telling them to find votes just enough that they win? Is that how our system should be run? You don't actually believe that. You obviously do not believe that. And it's not even like this isn't even your case. So you don't have to be clear about that. But you are his legal sort of press secretary. That's why you're on Martha McCollum's show. Could at least try to be remotely honest about this. And pretending to be aggrieved about Fani Willis and her sexual history or whatever. She was at least a little bit honest that she was not predicting that Willis would be removed from the case. She says that the fact that these charges were dropped doesn't necessarily mean that the judge is likely to boot her. So she was at least honest about that. Maybe because the stakes weren't that high, she could afford to say something that's actually true. But for the rest of it, it's just ridiculous and dishonest and weirdly, needlessly racist. So That's Alina Haba. That's the reputation that she wants to build for herself. And she's free to do that. We'll see what long-term effect that has on her life or on her career. But for now, we're waiting to find out what's actually going to happen with Willis. Will she remain on the case? If she doesn't, if she's removed, will the case entirely go away? There is no good logical reason why it would, but that is apparently, according to all the people closely following this, a possible outcome. So that's a weird component of our politics today.
Nobody's been treated like Trump in terms of badly.
Not in terms of badly, nobody. I mean, I know I was literally just talking about Lincoln 5 seconds ago. He wasn't treated in terms of as badly. Maybe in terms of head, in terms of bullet, but not in terms of badly. So that's Donald Trump. His brain is failing before our very eyes, and his excuses for why he keeps talking in that utterly bizarre way are failing as well. But don't worry, he's got a new excuse, and he rolled it out on Truth Social saying, the Hur report was revealed today, a disaster for Biden, a two-tiered standard of justice. Artificial intelligence was used by them against me in their videos of me. Can't do that, Joe.
Well, do you think that Joe Biden is a part of the Hur hearings? He wasn't there. He's not in Congress. Are you okay, Donald Trump? It was Jerry Nadler's the one who rolled out the mashup of you looking like a buffoon.
Can't do that, Jerry. That would be appropriate.
Do you know that they're different people? Is this like a Nancy Pelosi, Nikki Haley thing? Are you mixing them up again? In your literal fake defense of yourself, are you committing another act of brain rot? So he's saying it's AI. It's not authentic. Well, let's evaluate it. Here is the mashup that Nadler presented.
Viktor Orban. Anyone ever hear of him? He's the leader of Turkey.
By the way, they never report the crowd on January 6th. You know, Nikki Haley is in charge of security.
3 years later, how about that?
Did you actually have a one-on-one with Comey then?
Not much. Not even that I remember.
I like mosquitoes. We have languages coming into our country. We have nobody that even speaks those languages. They're truly foreign languages. Nobody speaks them. Saudi Arabia and Russia. Will we repeat to? Oh.
I have a really good memory.
Your next wife was a woman by the name of Marla Maples?
That's right.
Do you recall what years you were married to Ms. Maples?
It's called like up here, and it's called memory, and it's called other things.
So you don't remember saying you have one of the best memories?
I don't remember that.
And Putin, you know, has so little respect for Obama that he's starting to throw around the nuclear war, Terry. You heard that, nuclear.
We have to win in November, or we're not going to have Pennsylvania. They'll change the name.
And I talked to Putin a lot.
Did you ask him that?
I don't remember that. I saw that this morning. I don't remember asking him that question.
I have a good memory and all that stuff, like a great memory.
For 20 years, they were fighting ISIS. I defeated ISIS in 4 weeks.
And we did with Obama. We won an election that everyone said couldn't be won.
I'm not cognitively. And you know what? When I am, you're going to know it. You're going to be the first people. I know my people, you'll say, all right, Trump, you did a good job. Get the hell out of here. That's it.
So look, if somebody puts together a mashup like that of you, then that's gonna sting. You're not gonna like that. And you know, I despise Trump, but I get that this would hurt your feelings or whatever. There are a variety of different ways that you can address that, Donald Trump. And hiding behind utterly baseless, foolish claims that it was AI generated is no way to go, because we've seen those clips before. They're not new. Nadler put them together, or you know, some intern put them together, whatever. That doesn't make it AI. That's not a deep fake. That's you. Yeah, I mean, like, since that mashup was presented to the nation, you've given speeches and you've given interviews and you've produced enough clips to put together another one in terms of badly. Like, you're the one who is providing this. And you know, it doesn't even end there. Some of the hits were there. I particularly love that's a great one, but there's others too. And that I think maybe actually do a better job of getting across the idea that he is starting to fall apart, because Nadler's got some old clips there. He's got some clips that aren't really like the brain rot. They're just Trump being buffoonish and exaggerating and all that. But I want to give you just a little bit of a particular problem that Donald Trump has. Take a look at this.
Our hope is a word and world. Authority and authoritarian powers.
beating expectations in the House for the midterm and midterm year.
They sacrifice every day for the furniture and future of their children.
And you might recall the context and content of religion. Because look, if you're worried about the Nancy Pelosi getting mixed up with Nikki Haley, I think that that makes sense. It's super weird. He keeps mixing Joe Biden and Obama up, and there's no explanation for that. But this, I think, is actually worse. And we had Dr. John Gartner on the program just a couple of weeks ago to talk about it, because that's examples of what he referred to as, and I believe it's pronounced, phonemic paraphasis. And you can see the exact same thing happening over and over. And in that mashup, a couple of at the same speech, he's trying to get to a word, he can't get to it in his mind, so he says something like the word, it's similar in some way, and then he pauses and then he says the word. It's very predictable. A lot of what Trump does is strange and bizarre and seemingly random. This isn't. This is very predictable. It's happening all the time, much more recently. Like that's like the Nadler brain rot. He's been doing stuff like that for years, since 2016. But the stuff that we just showed you in that last, which was part of an excerpt from what Seth Meyers put together, I don't think that he used to do that back in 2016. I don't think he used to do that in 2020. He was buffoonish, he'd mix things up or whatever. But this is a very particular thing, and it is concerning, because Dr. John Gardner said that this is like one of the diagnostic criteria, not for generalized cognitive decline, but the results of already existing brain damage. That's how he described it. And I want to give you a little bit more of what he had said in an interview with Salon about this. He said Trump manifested a number of the phonemic paraphasias. He was trying to say evangelist, for example, but haltingly said evangelish. He was trying to say 3 years later, but said 3 years, lady, lady, lady. Trying to spit out the word lately, he sounded like a car with a bad battery struggling to turn over. When Trump can't find a word, his whole demeanor changes. It's almost like someone pulled the metaphorical plug. He looks blank, stops in mid-sentence or even mid-word. His jaw goes a little slack. And when he starts to talk again, he slurs, speaks haltingly, and often looks confused. Trying to get the word out, he shifts to a non-word that's easier to pronounce. When people are losing their ability to use language, they use non-words. They start with the stem of a real word and then they improvise from there. And if you take anything from this video, other than just like a laugh, and I get it, it is funny, it's one of the reasons I like covering it. I just want you to be on the lookout for that sort of issue. You know, not him like saying an insane word, but like when he's like trying to come up with Snake Pass or whatever, and he's saying Steak Mountain, that is evidence of a man in real time trying to work through fundamental physical issues with his brain. Okay, and it's not something he can hide. He can work through it, and look, to his credit, I think he works through it pretty quickly. It's not like he's struggling for a minute to come up with the word or whatever, but it's happening all the time now. And finally, to end our segment on this, and I understand, look, when he uses the claim of like AI, it's buffoonish. It fits in with Donald Trump being completely incapable of admitting his failings or his weaknesses or when he's wrong. That's like a lifelong thing. But I also just want to remind people, because I've been really trying to beat the war drums about this for a long time. Like this, the issue that AI presents in terms of misinformation is significant, but it's also multifaceted. And it's so easy to get caught up in the, like they're gonna make a fake video side of it, which is true and it is concerning. They're gonna be putting together videos of politicians that will be manipulated, that will be deep fakes. They're gonna put together audio recordings of people, activists, politicians, whatever, celebrities in advance of their goals. They'll have a video, you know, an audio of Tom Hanks talking about eating a baby or something so the QAnon people can get all horny or whatever. That stuff is definitely gonna happen and we should focus on it. But this side, I think, is almost more insidious, because now simply because that stuff exists or could exist, even if they're mainly the people who are gonna use it, now they can use it as a shield. And they're all doing that. Trump is using it as defenses against his brain rot. Roger Stone is using it as a defense against him making violent threats against people having to do with the 2020 election. Minor political figures who are caught on tape saying things or claiming that it's AI. That I think is even worse, because if you put out a video and it's fake, you in theory could demonstrate that. You could run it through an algorithm or a program that would show that it's fake. That wouldn't fix all the damage because 1 out of 100 people who saw the original thing will see the correction, but at least you can address it. What are you supposed to say about this? Like, I'm trying my best to fact check it, but I can't prove to him that they weren't AI manipulated or whatever. That's what makes it so insidious, is that it's kind of non-falsifiable and it's an easy out for dishonest people, or in this case, demented people, to evade responsibility for their physical condition or their crimes.
She's a Democrat. They're gonna vote for Biden. I'm not surprised about that. I am surprised that in the year of our Lord 2024, there is a public relations agent for Hamas sitting in the United States Congress.
Ilhan Omar there took this opportunity and your very important platform to say that Hamas was the good actor here. She's trafficked in anti-Semitic tropes that seek to strip Israel and the Jewish people of their sovereignty, their identity. I don't trust her opinion on this issue at all. And listen, there are important voices for the Palestinian people. She's not one of them.
And I think at the end of the day, the important voices for the Palestinian people should be determined by SC Cup. I think it's up to her in who gets to represent the Palestinian people and speak out in their interests. That was insane. That was live on CNN. That wasn't like OAN. That wasn't Newsmax. That wasn't realpatriot.gun news or anything. That was a CNN panel filled with people who heard Scott Jennings, former George W. Bush White House official, claim that a sitting congresswoman is some sort of PR agent for Hamas. And everybody just sat there and thought, yeah. And then when SC Cup decided to say something, she buttressed his argument. She says, yeah, no, she's the worst. She's terrible. She's anti-Semitic. No one should listen to her. That wasn't Fox. That wasn't The Five. That wasn't Gutfeld. That was CNN blatantly spreading casual Islamophobia. And look, thankfully, some people did rise to her defense. Unfortunately, they weren't on that panel. So, you know, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, how on earth is this kind of blatant Islamophobia so casually accepted without pushback? This is shocking. And it's casually accepted without pushback because you are just allowed to be Islamophobic on the news. And I'm not saying right wing news, just any news. You can say whatever you want about Muslims, about the Palestinian people, and you're probably gonna be fine. You can do it in the news, you can do it in politics. We've had multiple, like, she is getting attacked as being anti-Semitic because like 4 years ago, she talked about being all about the Benjamins. And when she tweeted that, that's it for the rest of her life. She's more anti-Semitic than, you know, Marjorie Greene talking about the Rothschilds setting off orbital lasers and things like that. So that's what they've agreed on. Meanwhile, we have congresspeople who were interviewed in the halls of Congress last week saying that the Palestinian people should be wiped out. Not a metaphor that you try to twist into being about no longer there being like an Israeli state. Like, you have Donald Trump said the IDF needs to finish the job after killing 30,000 plus civilians. Do you see like the imbalance in the scales here about what's acceptable? And I want to remind you, as insane objectively as that is, in particular, for that to be the way that the majority of the CNN panel greeted Ilhan Omar's comments coming after this interview.
If the election were held today, would you vote for Joe Biden? Can you confirm that he would have your vote today?
Of course, democracy is on the line. We are facing down fascism. And I personally know what my life felt like having Trump as the president of this country. And I know what it felt like for my constituents and for people around this country and around the world.
And do you think your constituents ultimately will come to the same conclusion that you did, you know, the tens of thousands who voted uncommitted?
The uncommitteds have been very clear. They want a change in policy, and we've seen that. Within 3 days, you had the vice president using the word ceasefire. We now have the president saying there is a red line if Israel goes into Rafah, that he is going to condition aid. So there has been a significant progress.
Obviously, that was all radical. What an extremist Ilhan Omar is. Are you gonna support Joe Biden for president? Yeah, I will, for very reasonable, logical reasons. I disagree with him on this policy. I am advocating for him to change the policy. I'm doing that in an incredibly peaceful and reasonable way. At the end of the day, though, I don't want Donald Trump to be president because he's literally a fascist and he's an existential threat to myself, my people, and our nation and our form of government. So I will support Joe Biden. But I also want to point out that the campaign that we waged in the uncommitted vote has already seemingly borne fruit. Which is good, not just for us, but for everyone, because many, many, many Democrats don't support Joe Biden's position on this. And this campaign appears to have pushed him in a direction where he's going to reassure those people that maybe he doesn't have as radical of a position as he had led them to believe previously. So all of this is utterly reasonable. That interview ends, they transition to the panel that includes Abby Phillips, I think, who was doing the interview, and now she's a PR person for Hamas. There's some radical stuff happening in American politics. I don't think it's the words of Representative Ilhan Omar. What are we supposed to do? If you believe that the president is sitting silently by as a policy is pursued that's killing thousands and thousands and thousands of men, women, and children, just piling up an ever increasing mountain of child corpses, what are you supposed to do? I mean, that's not a rhetorical question. I already have their answer. You're supposed to shut the hell up about it. That's clearly what you're supposed to do. Because if some of you, 100,000 of you, vote uncommitted, which doesn't even lose Joe Biden the state, let alone the primary, doesn't get Trump elected, but does send a signal, if the polls weren't already, that people don't support Joe Biden's position on this, that's radical. That's dangerous. That's anti-Semitic. What the hell are you supposed to do? You know, it's just so ironic when we go years of the Democrats saying like, why are the young people so apathetic? Why don't they get involved? Why don't they care about anything? No, not that thing. Don't care about that. Don't care about that objective life or death issue. It's inconvenient 8 months before an election for you to give a damn about that. It's people living their values. I'm sorry that that's so inconvenient, that that comes off as so extreme and radical to you. She's already said she's gonna support Joe Biden. It is incredibly likely that the vast majority of those who voted uncommitted are going to support Joe Biden. What more can they give you? Are they still allowed as a treat, free will, perhaps to disagree a little bit, to want to put some pressure on an issue that's incredibly important to them?
Do you believe that X and you have some responsibility to moderate hate speech on the platform? That you wouldn't have to answer these questions from reporters about the Great Replacement Theory as it relates to
Democrats? I don't have to answer these questions.
The Great Replacement Theory as it relates to Jewish people. Do you think that?
I don't have to answer questions from reporters. Don, the only reason I'm doing this interview is because you're on the X platform and you asked for it. Otherwise, I would not do this interview.
So you don't think, do you think that you wouldn't get in trouble or you wouldn't be criticized for these things?
I'm criticized constantly. I could care less.
Yeah, it's couldn't care less. You know, I only point that out not to be pedantic, but because he's supposed to be one of the smartest people on the planet. So you'd think that he'd be able to get that. So that is Elon Musk versus Don Lemon. You're probably familiar at this point how this thing ended. So that's the Don Lemon show, which was going to have an exclusive deal with Twitter, and it doesn't now. Because of that interview, he asked questions that were like kind of tough to Elon Musk. Elon Musk left, and as he was leaving, he texted his business team to cancel the deal. He had a petulant little temper tantrum, a hissy fit, and now Don Lemon doesn't get his deal. By the way, I'm not doing this segment like to speak out in defense of Don Lemon. I don't care about Don Lemon. I don't care about his career. I don't care about his business deals or whatever. He's an incredibly wealthy guy. He's going to be perfectly fine regardless of what happens. I do like seeing a journalist ask a person, particularly a business person, tough questions. And while I'm not in the business of like trying to find things to give Don Lemon credit for, this is a guy who owns the platform that you have apparently a deal with, and you're asking him tough questions, which is, I'm not going to say that it's objectively brave, but it's braver than we generally are led to expect journalists to be. So minimal credit to Don Lemon right there. But that said, Elon Musk said all of what he said there and thought that he looks cool coming out of it. That is always the thing about Elon Musk that at the end of the day really gets me. He thinks at all times that he's killing it. He thinks that him sitting there and saying, I don't have to answer questions. I don't have to answer questions. I could care less about the criticism. Like you constantly whine about the criticism. Like you could definitely care less than you do because you care. Like you inaccurately used it, but you revealed something true in doing so. You do care about that. And or look, you're not physically required to answer questions of journalists, but you decided to own this platform. You sort of put it on your own shoulders that was going to be a thing that you'd be asked questions for. And more so than it even needed to be. He had said, remember, when he bought it and made a couple of decisions that were absolutely horrific ideas, stupid ideas. He said that he was going to hand it over to a new CEO and he was going to back off. That literally never happened, by the way, just to be clear. Another one of his claims about his businesses that turned out to be shockingly untrue. So if you are going to hug Twitter to you at all times, then yes, when it gradually descends even further into a bot-ridden, hate speech-filled hell zone, yeah, we're gonna have some tough questions for you. Or not even tough questions, literally just questions. And he can't take it. And so in the same way that it's bizarre that this guy who has, he's had everything in the world given to him and has even more now, can't take questions like that and thinks that lashing out in the way he does makes himself look cool, saying, I don't need to answer your questions. Or when advertisers fled the platform and he was interviewed about it, saying, well, I don't want them. I don't want their money. We'll see what Earth thinks about them killing Twitter. He thinks that this stuff makes him look cool or tough or mature. He's a tiny little baby boy. That's who he is. And the only reason that he has the fan base that he does is there are other people who are tinier and babier and boyier. That's it. Okay, he's been able to find some people who are somehow less equipped to deal with the real world than he is, and they're big fans of him. So anyway, look, we could go through all of the supposed arguments that is being made by Twitter as to why they cut it off. X Business. Again, X is such a stupid name. X, it's Twitter Business. What's wrong with Twitter Business? Anyway, they put out a whole tweet about how they were gonna do a deal. They still want diverse voices and perspectives. No, Elon Musk got, like, we can go to Kara Swisher. He sent a text message, contract terminated. He just freaked out and killed it. And as always, he has an emotional outburst. And then everyone else around him needs to do the work of trying to make it look legit, trying to make it look professional. And you know, maybe it wasn't about the hate speech. Maybe it was that he was asked about ketamine use. So he was asked about his drug use. And you know, for a guy who like thought it was like cool branding to go on Joe Rogan and smoke weed or whatever, you would think that he wouldn't be so sensitive about being asked about his drug use since he's such a public user of drugs. But there's been some critical coverage of the fact that not only is he apparently on a variety of different substances, but that he's been pushing it on other people. And there's a culture at his companies of if you don't take ketamine or do coke with him or whatever, allegedly, you could lose your positions. So I don't even think it's really about the personal criticism, although I have no doubt that he would freak out about that. It's that this reporting has demonstrated beyond just the buffoonish statements or the fact that he makes anti-Semitic comments or that every single day he tweets about the great replacement theory, he's bad for business. He makes execs worse, okay? Shareholders at some point are going to catch up to that. They for some reason have not, but they should. I saw a report yesterday, and this will be the final thing that we talk about here, about the tax that Tesla has paid to the federal government. Or sorry, I should say the tax they haven't paid, because they've paid effectively none over the last 4 years. Over the last 4 years, they've pulled in $4 billion, I believe. And $2.5 billion of that was given to the execs. I believe the top five executives pulled in $2.5 billion of the $4 billion that they brought in. Look, I can say that that is reason to hate Elon Musk. You know, maybe that's not persuasive. But if you're an investor in the company, is that the way that you want the company to be run? Do you want it to be run by like a grown-up man-child who's trying to force drugs on people because he doesn't have any friends? Is that good for business? I think you could expect more. And I will also finally just point out, because this is also, in addition to everything else, as Don Lemon points out, I don't think you believe in free speech. It's a joke. It's always been a joke that Elon Musk or any of the people who claim to be free speech warriors actually care about it. They don't. I will remind you that on Twitter, they did a mass purge of journalists, including Donnie O'Sullivan of CNN. They purged them. They also, by the way, purged prominent journalists and leftists, including activists, including Ken Klippenstein himself. And just to be clear, Those are separate purges. Those happened at different times. They just every once in a while, he sees that a journalist said something mean about him and he bans a bunch of people from the platform. But definitely a free speech warrior. Anyway, Don Lemon's gonna be fine. He was given a massive settlement by CNN, but I am at least glad that he was able to reveal Elon Musk for the ridiculous child that he is. In any event, let's move on to our last topic to close out this first hour. A GOP Senate candidate running in Wisconsin has a strange background, a take hiding in his past that I think might bother some people in Wisconsin. So this is Eric Hovde. You can see him in this photo. He's running for Senate in Wisconsin, trying to challenge Democrat Tammy Baldwin. And he had kind of a take about alcohol, of all things. He says, I mean, look at alcohol has a lot of negative byproducts. If someone wanted to distill it, drink it, fine, go ahead. But sadly, as we know, it's produced a lot of negative byproducts as a part of society. I don't think adding more negative byproducts to society is a healthy thing. And saying that, I think the cat's out of the, or the horse is out of the barn, and it's going to be hard to put back. I love his animal-based metaphors. What he's saying there is, if he could, he thinks that retail sale of alcohol should be illegal. Now, if you can distill your own alcohol, I guess we won't lock you up. If you can make brew your own beer, that's fine, but it shouldn't be retail available. This is not a thing that like a guy said in the 1910s. Like this is now. Now, this is past candidacy. He's not advocating for that right now. And he at least even it seems to admit that it's not gonna happen. But why is that a stance that you on the one hand have, or on the other hand, felt like you needed to share with people that if it was up to you, alcohol would be illegal? It is an objectively weird position for a Republican, the party of personal freedom and liberty, to take. But in particular, it's weird because he identifies as a libertarian. This is hardly small government if you're outlawing, you know, Mike's Hard Lemonade from being sold. But in particular, it's a weird position for a guy running in Wisconsin, because maybe you're not familiar with this. I guess I hadn't really thought about it either. It's kind of alcohol central. The brands Miller, Schlitz, Pabst, and Blatt's were all founded in Milwaukee, a city whose baseball team is, remember, the Brewers, and which is often called the beer capital of the world. Across the state, bars outnumber grocery stores roughly 3-1 for a total of about 8 pubs per every 10,000 people. And the industry is kind of significant in Wisconsin. It accounts for more than 161,000 jobs that pay out roughly $3.2 billion in wages a year and generates $2.6 billion in tax revenue, according to the most recent figures available from the Wisconsin Tavern Association, which sounds delightful. It's a lobbying group, though, bear that in mind. And so, kind of like an important industry. I don't know why as a candidate you'd feel like it's your job to even like fantasize about taking it down. And again, he's not pushing for that anymore, but it's a weird take. And it's not just on the alcohol. He has weird views on drugs too. He's in some way, he seems to prefer them, but still wouldn't want them to be available. He says, you know what? I'm opposed to it as well, marijuana. And where I am on it is this. I get the argument that marijuana is a lot less harmful than any other drug, including arguably alcohol. So I'm glad that he could admit that few Republicans can, and that kids might try alcohol because marijuana because it's illegal and think, oh, I handled that, so I can try something harder. So I get that argument from people that are pro marijuana. The easier solution would be to just decriminalize it. So that sounds like we shouldn't be involved in this. He does go on to say, I'm a libertarian in most cases, not when it comes to drugs, which like if you're a libertarian, like do you understand that the only mitigating factor on that being maybe the dumbest, least internally consistent ideology is that you at least will allow people to smoke weed. Most of them, either for personal reasons or for political pragmatism, admit that the government shouldn't be involved in that if you're gonna say that the government shouldn't be involved in much. But he apparently has removed even that little benefit. So he's a weird guy. He's got a lot of weird things to say about student activists. Maybe we'll cover him more as the campaign continues. But he believes that, you know, people who are advocating against speakers coming to campus are fascists, basically. He also seems to believe that young workers are incredibly lazy, and he thinks that too many people spend all their time on phones. Just gonna remind him, as a Republican, like your God Emperor Donald Trump is Truth Socialing right now. Like he is on his phone all day long. So maybe it's not just the kids at this point. But anyway, that's Eric Hovde. We're just doing this initial pass to let the people of Wisconsin know who he is. Maybe they'll like him. Maybe they'll prefer him to Tammy Baldwin. But if you're one of the many people involved in the alcohol industry in Wisconsin, maybe look into his past a little bit. In any event, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, one and all, for being here. And for those of you listening on the podcast, thank you as always, much appreciated.